Today on Wings.
I had even thought that nuclear power plants were closed systems and that they only released radiation if they had an accident. So, you know, this all came crashing in to me.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The late Rosalie Bertell was a biometrist, a mathematician who analyzes statistics relating to biology. She blew the whistle on health effects of ionizing radiation on human bodies, including from medical testing, weapons testing, and power plants. She was born in the U.S. and did her early work there.
I was a math major for both bachelor's degree and the master's degree. When I wanted to go on for a doctorate, I was offered a scholarship from the National Institute of Health. At that point in the early 60s, they had given up with trying to teach biologists higher math, and they were trying to get mathematicians to learn biology. And I've been working ever since in the mathematical modeling for biochemical and biomedical happenings, so I have gotten into epidemiology.
Bertell was a senior research scientist at Roswell Park Cancer Institute and a consultant to the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and Health Canada. In 1984, she founded the International Institute of Concern for Public Health in Toronto, Canada. 10 years later, she gave this interview about her work.
Now I'm working to develop what I'm calling a new layer of medical care, which is care for the community, developing ways to say whether or not a community is in a health problem, whether or not the proportion of respiratory disease or kidney disease is normal or whether it's abnormal. And if it's abnormal, then what intervention can we make on a community level that will improve the health of the community? Just to give you an example, comparing two communities in the metro area of Toronto, we found one community where 60% of the people had respiratory problems. In the control community, we had only 12% with respiratory problems. Now, there's something radically wrong there. The community that had the high respiratory problems were downwind of a big incinerator, which probably was a major contributing factor. But, you know, we did look at other things, people's socioeconomic status, and measure that impact. We look at the impact of lifestyle and hobbies, indoor pollution, even floor wax and roach spray, and we look at outdoor pollution, and we rate all of these both on the hazard to the individual and impact in terms of ill health on the whole community, so they can be then approached by the community in a rational way.
In 1986, Rosalie Bertell received a Right Livelihood Award for her research on factors that damage the biosphere and the human gene pool, especially ionizing radiation. Here's how she made the transition to that line of research.
When they wanted to build a nuclear power plant in Barker, New York, a citizen group was asked to make a presentation before the Niagara County Legislature. So they contacted the cancer hospital, and they referred it to me because I had been doing radiation-related research. And they asked me if I would go to speak at this meeting, and so I was a bit fearful because I didn't know anything about nuclear power plants, and they told me I didn't have to, I just had a talk on radiation. Most of my work had been done on the effects of medical diagnostic X-ray. When I got to the meeting, they had only enough chairs on the stage for the men from the power plant, and they asked the rest of us to sit in the audience. I asked for an overhead projector. They didn't have any, but they were putting their movies up in the projection room in the back. And, you know, like all this kind of thing had been happening. But I listened to their public relations material where they told the people that the radiation released from routinely from this nuclear plant was just like a few medical x-rays, and your doctor gave you those, so therefore there was no problem. Well, I mean, this was what I needed to hear. Plus, I found out that the plant was next door to the Cornucopia Farms, where they raised the Gerber's baby food, and that these men didn't even know they were next to the baby food farm. It was quite a baptism that night, because I had even thought that nuclear power plants were closed systems and that they only released radiation if they had an accident. So, you know, this all came crashing in to me. Anyway, I guess I waxed eloquent, because the next day, that was the first moratorium in the United States against nuclear power. And then I started getting deluged with letters from citizen groups around the country saying, we don't know what you did, but please come to our place and do it. And then I realized this was going on all over, because I had been out of touch with it. But I also got retaliation in the newspapers, and they said that what I had said at the meeting was not representative of the Cancer Institute. Then there was job action at work. I was told that I had to clear everything with the public relations department before I spoke to anybody in the media. My mail was opened. One weekend my desk was ransacked and some papers taken, and, you know, this kind of harassment, which increased later because I was also involved in the Love Canal. And Beverly Pagan was working at Roswell with me, and we got involved with West Valley, the nuclear reprocessing plant that failed and closed down. And it's very high-level waste. It was the worst stuff. It, in many ways, worse than Hanford waste because it was more concentrated. So we couldn't find any of the men at the Institute that would help us. So Beverly took on the Love Canal, and I backed her, and I took on the West Valley, and she backed me. Both of us ended up leaving the Institute because of the pressures. But what was really the last straw was the congressional hearings were held in 1978 on the use of medical x-ray. Congress was making an attempt to control and reduce the uses of medical x-ray, and I had been asked to give congressional testimony, but I was getting pressure at the Institute not to speak about research that I had published. I mean, this was already published, peer-reviewed research, and this was a congressional hearing, and so I quit at that point. I found out later that was not a good way to handle it, because I should have protested it. It's interference with a congressional witness. That's a felony offense, actually. But I wasn't very sophisticated, and I just quit. And then I found myself faced with the congressional hearing, and I had no secretary, no Xerox machine, no press downstairs, no help. My brother, who is a lawyer, helped me, and I got the congressional testimony together and got to the Congress, and it was quite effective, actually. That was the date of the stopping of the chest x-rays, the mobile x-rays, the shoe store x-rays, you know, where you can watch how the shoes fit, and there were many cutbacks as a result of those hearings.
From the Wings Archive, you're listening to mathematician and epidemiologist Dr. Rosalie Bertel, interviewed in 1994 by Laura Flanders.
I'd like to go on to the topic of breast cancer and the work that you've done on breast cancer. Maybe you could start with an idea of what leads you to believe that radiation plays a role in the increased rates of breast cancer that we're seeing these days.
I had worked for 9 years on the analysis of the Tri-State Leukemia Survey. That was a major survey done in Maryland, Minnesota, and New York State. Those three states have tumor registries, so it was not a death certificate study. As soon as the person was diagnosed, they had to report to the state authority, and then a public health nurse would go and interview the person and the family, collect a lot of information and 50 different possible exposures. And then we also had several sets of controls for each person. It was a study both of childhood leukemia and adult leukemia. And as you can imagine, with 50 variables, it was very complicated data. So I spent about 4 years screening the data for the factors that looked like they were connected with the increase of leukemia, and then evaluating how many of the cases could be attributed to this factor. And it became obvious that the most important factor of the 50 that were looked at was the medical diagnostic X-ray. So then I spent another 5 years just to study the effect of the medical X-rays, including dental and chest and GI series and intravenous pyelogram, all the kinds of things people get, and that general effect on leukemia in particular. And I started looking at the non-lymphatic leukemias, because those leukemias go up with an astonishing regularity with every year of aging. And when I think back on it now, it didn't occur to me at the time, but it does, given what I know now, that your chronological age is a very good measure of your exposure to background radiation. And many of the things connected with radiation are old age diseases, or even things like Down syndrome that are connected with radiation, also connected with older mothers. So, you know, that there is a connection here. And I started asking the question, how much medical diagnostic X-ray would be equivalent to 1 year of natural aging for increasing your risk of these leukemias? And what I found was, it depends on where the medical X-ray, whether or not it's hitting the bone marrow. So if you had dental X-rays or periphery, like arms or legs, you're not hitting as much bone marrow. And so one rad, as the doctors measure it, would be only about a quarter of a year aging. However, if that same rad is a pelvic examination or a gastrointestinal that hits the pelvic arch where most of the bone marrow is, then one rad is a whole year of aging. So I had done a lot of work on how radiation was measured and what the estimates of cancer were in the literature. So I had looked at things like the Beer reports, biological effects of ionizing radiation. And I had noticed that the report gave cancer risk per year, whereas most of the medical books at the time gave cancer risks over a lifetime. Now, I think that that was a tactic to make the number look smaller, but anyway, I'd noticed that. So when the first mammogram program came out, which was in Texas in the 70s, I started to look at their calculation of how many breast cancers they would cause for every breast cancer they would pick up early, because they were using radiation, and they knew very well that the breast was very highly sensitive tissue to radiation. I mean, I find that very strange, that you would be so bent on preventing cancer death that you would be willing to increase cancer incidence. And women do not just object to cancer death, they object to cancer. But then when I started to look at the calculations, I realized that they had misinterpreted the Beer report, and they had taken the cancer risk estimate for 1 year as if it were for a lifetime, which is a pretty big mistake. I understand why it was made. I don't think it was made deliberately. Anyway, I was working under Erwin Broos, director of biostatistics at Roswell Park Memorial Institute. So I reported this to him right away when I found this, because I thought this was undermining the whole mammography program, which was scheduled to get millions of dollars at the time. So meanwhile, Jan Baylor had come out against the mammography program, so Bros, who was rather noisy person, he came out very strong with the information I had given him and started campaigning against the program. So I kept quiet because those two are making enough noise. Anyway, that program was scuttled. It was quite a high-profile thing. All the funding was taken back after they had already announced they were going to have this big program. So they were rather angry, and someone who had been part of that early mammography program sat on the committee for our funding for the continuation of the Tri-State Leukemia Survey. And they also put on our site committee Seymour Jablin, who was the head of all of the atomic bomb studies. And we were also attacking his research because we were finding risk estimates for leukemia that were much higher than they were saying based on the Hiroshima data. And there was certainly a lot of politics going on because after having been funded for 10 years by the National Cancer Institute, the funding was stopped. And we got a letter saying, if you would like to change your line of research, we would be glad to consider a resubmission of your program. So I was really angry at that. But it was my first contact with this breast cancer mammography program. And right from the beginning in the 70s, I've always had a very bad feeling about it.
Now we're in a situation where the breast cancer rate is somewhere between 1 in 9, 1 in 8. And there are all sorts of explanations. Many of the ones that we see most often in the press have to do with diet, have to do with genetics, have to do with exposure to pesticides. What is your reaction to the state of the debate so far, and what do you think is being left out of the picture?
Well, the risk factors that have been identified so far for breast cancer explain less than 10% of the cases. So, you know, they're obviously not the overall explanation. Eating fatty foods is an interesting one because fat never really hurt anyone. It's that a lot of the carcinogens are fat-soluble, not water-soluble. So instead of going after the polluters, they go after the people and make people feel it's their fault if they ate fat, you know. A fat's part of a normal diet, not to be eaten in excess, but there's nothing wrong with fat. Most of the cancer-related programs right now are what I would characterize as blame the victim programs. The big ones are don't smoke, don't eat fatty food, and don't sit in the sun. You know, well, it's not my fault that the military's up there ruining the ozone layer. Or the carcinogens. Why not go after the people putting the carcinogens that are fat-soluble into the environment instead of telling people not to eat fatty foods? Also, the cigarettes, North American cigarettes, is among the worst in the world. And a lot of the pollution in the cigarettes is from the phosphate fertilizer that's being used on the tobacco, which incorporates radioactive material into the tars and any other substance that's there. So I do think that we need to go into our cancer and health questions more deeply. You certainly are not going to solve all the health problems in this country by jogging. And again, I'm not against jogging. I'm just saying that it's too superficial and there's too much blame and responsibility put on the individual. That's why I'm trying to work with communities. I think there are aspects of your health that can only be dealt with on a community level, like the community water supply or the community air pollution level. There's nothing you can do. In fact, you can make your health worse if you have air pollution by jogging, because you breathe more deeply and you bring more of it into your lungs. So we have to become more sophisticated in health, and we have to begin to deal on community, regional, national, and international levels with the major threats to health and not just have a physical fitness class.
Dr. Bertel's mathematical analysis of the breast cancer epidemic led her to serious conclusions about effects of nuclear testing. The U.S. conducted above-ground nuclear tests from 1945 until 1963.
I started looking at the data very carefully when Mothering magazine approached me to write a feature article on breast cancer. I spent a good bit of time looking at the detailed data, and I found one of the best articles is in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute in 1990. It was done by the Kaiser Permanente, which is a health maintenance organization in Oregon, and they take care of people for years. I mean, that's why you get into a health maintenance organization. So they had very detailed information on 2,000 women with breast cancer. And their information was really quite interesting and startling because the increase is not gradual. It's not something that's been happening slowly over a long period of time. If you look at their data, you'll see that as different cohorts of people, people born in different years, move into the, say, 40 to 59-year-old or the over 60-year-old group, there's a sudden jump. These are big jumps, as many as an increase in 100 cases per 100,000, which is a, that's a monumental increase. And if you have a solid tumor like that, you figure it hits observable size in around 30 years. So you start saying, what was going on 30 years ago. So when you start looking back, it's pretty clear that these numbers are being affected by the fallout period from 1951 to 1963, when most of North America was blanketed with fallout from atmospheric nuclear testing. And it's interesting because when the people that were in their 20s moved into the 40 to 59 group, there's a big jump. When the younger people moved into the over 60, there was another jump there. So there are several very discrete jumps. And it looks to me as if this epidemic will continue now until I think we've now gotten to the ones that were around 11 or 12 years old at the time the testing started. They're now getting into the breast cancer age, but the younger ones have still to come. So this epidemic, I think, will be with us for a while until this whole cohort that was affected by the atmospheric testing moves through. Now, I don't think that's the only factor, and it's interesting to look at the breakdown of the types of cancer. The dramatic increase in breast cancer is in the estrogen positive response kind of tumor. And one of the things I hope to do is find out from the Japanese what type of cancer they're experiencing, because the women who were between 0 and 10 years of age at the time of the bombing in Hiroshima are experiencing the same problem as here. They're hitting the ages at which the breast cancers are developing in extraordinarily high numbers. And given the fact that the underlying epidemic can be due to radiation exposure at an early age, I have even more serious questions about routinely using mammography on people, because radiation can cause cancer, but it also can stimulate a cancer that's caused by other factors and cause it to develop more rapidly rather than stay subclinical where the person is coping with it. If the breast cancer is being initiated by the organochlorines, and there is some evidence that since organochlorines replace estrogen, they can attach themselves in places that are estrogen receptors, and you've got an estrogen receptor positive type tumor, there's no reason to believe the organochlorines can't affect it. And they've certainly been found in increased levels in breasts of women with tumors. If that is the mechanism, then you're making it worse again by irradiating. So I don't see any justification for routine use of mammography for screening. I'm not objecting to it as a diagnostic tool when there's a good reason to use it.
So the information that you're giving suggests that there is a damaged generation who are now visible and countable as those who are victims of this breast cancer epidemic. You're also challenging the conventional wisdom with respect to treatment and screening, or at least screening.
Yeah, I think women are going to have to make up their own minds. I don't think they should listen to me any more than they should do exactly what their doctor tells them or what the press is telling them. It's a very personal decision. And I think if you refuse the mammography, then you also have an obligation to undertake frequent self-examination, to learn how to self-examine, and to do it very faithfully, because certainly the breast cancer problems are real. However, with a slow-growing tumor, and the majority are slow-growing, they're not likely to reproduce and metastasize before they're 1 centimeter, and you can feel a 1 centimeter tumor. But the very rapidly growing ones are apt to metastasize before 1 centimeter. But they double in about 28 days, so you'd have to miraculously do the mammography in that last 28 days, maybe at about 15, to pick it up early enough before it reached the 1 centimeter stage. So you really don't gain a lot by the mammography. But you do have to do the breast examination. I think that's really important.
Dr. Rosalie Bertel, mathematician and epidemiologist, researched many issues affecting the health of people and the planet. She was director of the International Medical Commission on Bhopal and organized the International Medical Commission on Chernobyl. After age 70, she published 2 books for a general readership, No Immediate Danger, Prognosis for a Radioactive Earth, and a survey of military uses of geoengineering titled Planet Earth, the Latest Weapon of War. Rosalie Bertel died in 2012. There are still people and countries that respect the kind of information she found. Australia has banned nuclear reactors. Germany announced the closing of its last reactors in 2023. The U.S. Department of Energy classes nuclear power with clean energy. They are encouraging proliferation of small reactors. In 2022, Biden budgeted $6 billion to keep older reactors going for a few more years. $1 billion goes to that Diablo Canyon nuclear plant near the beach where people surf in California. Wings thanks Laura Flanders and WBAI Radio for the archival interview with Rosalie Bertel, recorded in 1994. We also thank your community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose latest events can be found on the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wing Sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.